This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 59 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we chat with Lauren Kwan, speaking on protocol. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome back to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting across the table is the Beast. How you doing, Beast?
I'm good, Woody. We record these shows a little bit in advance, and we're still dealing with the winter of 2015.
It seems like it'll never end.
I know. I saw a Facebook where somebody had built a Cupid doll snowman and had killed it on their deck. Die, winter, die.
You got to do something to get rid of it.
Yeah, maybe a little voodoo will work here. Woody, we got somebody with us that is not in snow, though.
Out in lovely San Francisco.
Oh, yes. Hi, Lauren.
Hi there. Yes, and I'm basking in my living room looking out over my sunny deck. It's about, oh, I don't know, 70 degrees. It's lovely.
Oh, man.
And it's not that I'm a sadist or anything, but, you know, just wanted to put that out there.
With us tonight via Skype is the lovely Lauren Kwan. You are in San Francisco, right?
Actually, I'm in San Jose.
San Jose, the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. And Lauren, been in the lifestyle for 1 or 2 years. What brought you in?
Yeah, so 1 or 2 years would have been about 1984, 85.
Those are long years.
Very long years. What brought me in was I saw things at Gay Pride. I saw hot leathermen. I saw power exchange. And I was young enough where I didn't really know what it was that I was seeing, but whatever it was, I knew I wanted it.
That led you to go and find it.
Exactly.
But in the 80s, for women, the options were a bit more limited, weren't they?
Yes, they were. Well, actually, in the 80s, pretty much everybody's options were more limited. You know, no search engines. You really had to kind of spot what you liked and figure out how to approach or just look out and meet someone, start a conversation and, oh yeah, that's really hot. I think that's hot too. So back in that day, one really needed to get lucky. Don't know how to say it any better than that.
And more ways than one.
Yep.
In the Bay Area, you had a lot of chances for luck. You have a lot more than other places in the country.
I'm from Los Angeles. There was a large enough visible presence. You know, there were Leather Levi bars, and people knew about the Leather Levi bars. And in the gay community, you know, we've known about leather sex. Even if you were a vanilla gay, you knew about the leather men. Being able to get involved with that was, for me, fascinating. My background, I did not come into the scene in the women's community. I actually came into the scene in the men's community. I lucked out. I actually was a coworker. I remember talking to him about hot leather guys and this scene that I had seen out in the back alley behind the one way, which was a Levi leather bar. And he said, oh, you should come to dinner sometime. And I met his partner, who was actually his master. We struck up a conversation. He found it fascinating that I was so in tune with what I was seeing and how it spoke to me. And we began a mentor-mentee relationship. So he introduced me. I was at men's only parties, which was phenomenal. I didn't know that that was rare, except for the fact that I was the only woman there. I guess that probably should have given me a clue.
That's a tip-off, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that was a tip-off. I have really small hands.
Oh, well, we know what experiences you were getting. Uh-huh.
Yes. So I was basically the break-in fist, also known as Barbie's dream fist.
I love it.
And it was really funny because there would be some boys up on slings petrified. This would be their first fisting. And I would hold my hand up in front of them and, you know, just tell them, you've sucked cock bigger than this. And I actually had one guy stick my fist in his mouth and say, yeah, you're right. So
I love it. That's so cool.
Yeah.
This lets you into the world that we know. And the journey has been going on since for what now? The past 30 years?
30 some odd years.
I can't imagine that.
I actually spent the 90s underground. So I was in the leather community in the Los Angeles area in the 80s. My partner and I moved to the Bay Area in like 1990. And by that time, I was involved with the women's community. There were various things that were going on, not a new relationship, but an established relationship in a new location. And both of us just kind of got tired of the leather scene. Not to say that we weren't kinky. We just were kinky underground. We dropped out of the public scene. You know, after a few years, I did miss it. So I came back around 2000, 2001.
It does happen. People burn out for a while and they regroup and come back.
And for me, it was really fascinating because I had gone underground. And that was, you're from the Bay Area, Woody, I believe you are.
I am.
That was around the time that QSM and a lot of classes started. And that really didn't happen. You know, in my first years or my, you know, first decade in the scene, you learned by asking other people. So the concept of classes was like, oh, that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, you go to a party and there it is.
Yeah, and that was pretty much it. When I came back, I really did feel like I was in a time capsule. I come back and now it's BDSM. Where the hell did those two other letters come from? You know, what the hell is a munch? What is this stuff that you're talking about?
Come on, the burger munch started in Palo Alto.
That's right. But that started in early 90s, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We were organizing and spreading out to the straight community.
I saw a lot of that in the later 80s, you know, in I'm going to say 87 to 90, 91. I was seeing a lot of bridges being built. Gays and lesbians and hets, you know, that there was a lot of crossover. There was shared space. Then again, I went underground. And when I came back, things just seemed very, very different. Not bad, not worse, not better, just different. And it took a year or so for me to acclimate to that.
You stayed with us ever since. So you've seen the evolution that's going on today with mm-hmm. FetLife and the internet and all the changes that's brought.
Mm-hmm.
It's been quite an explosion then comparing today to the 80s when you first arrived.
Oh, absolutely.
Better, worse, different?
Different. I'm not going to say it's worse. I will say I'm grateful in some ways because anytime any person can be comfortable with their sexuality is a win. You know, I just think that in and of itself is a win. There's a part of me that's like, wait, this thing that made me special and different, I'm not so special or different anymore. So, you know, there's that stamping my little feet that I'm not a special little snowflake any longer because, you know, kink has gotten somewhat mainstream.
Somewhat, but it's not totally.
Yeah. And I kind of dislike that. You know, I don't want to be mainstream.
Well, especially when your kinks are more vast than the vanilla kink that is out. Oh, vanilla kink. That's a new one.
Vanilla kink. You got vanilla a new kink. Word there.
You know, the 50 shaders that are coming in, to me, that's vanilla kink.
And I agree with that. But we've been seeing, you know, a lot of focus has been put on 50 Shades, you know, bringing in the unwashed masses, for lack of a better term.
They can get everything that they need now at their local drugstore or supermarket.
That's right. Target has an entire 50 Shades of Grey clothing line. And so there's a part of me that feels that it kind of diminishes. You know, there's a diminishing effect.
It has taken the edge off of it for sure.
Yes.
I went to the supermarket down the street here the other day, and they had a display that said 50 Shades of Grey, and it had all these little holes where it had different things, and I looked at it carefully, and there was nothing in the display because it was sold out. And I looked at it, and it said Christian's tie. It had handcuffs, and it had different things, and it was completely sold out in a grocery store in the neighborhood.
A Christian's tie and a pair of leather chaps. We can't compare them.
No, we can't. And especially somebody with a very small hand.
Yes.
Yes. You know.
Yes, Barbie.
On Skype with us, we have Lauren Kwan, who's going to talk about protocol. But she's going to do that right after this word from Midori. On the phone with us is Midori from San Francisco. How are you?
I'm doing good.
You have a big event coming up.
I sure do. I've been doing this for over a decade. It's called AIDS Life Cycle.
And what is that?
It's this amazing experience. It's a 7-day bicycle ride for 2,500 cyclists riding from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And there are 600 of us roadie volunteers. I'm one of the volunteer roadies. And what we do, we cycle, we pedal, we cry. It hurts. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. And do this to raise funds and awareness for critically needed HIV services and education.
And how can our listeners help with this?
See, the thing is, I'm fundraising too, and this year my fundraising has been really, really challenged, and I need your help. I'm sick of my friends getting sick. I am also sad from various long-term survivors dying from, quote, heart attack, quote, cancer, and it's all HIV-related. I'm also frustrated with the ongoing lack of education. So here's what I would love to get help in. One, I'll be doing all my Twitters and social media, so cheer me on as I post photos from the road. That's one. And I'll be wearing silly bunny hats. And then two, donate to my AIDS Lifecycle fundraising, because they have 70 cents to the dollar is going to services. And there are people that are living longer and able to live a healthy life because of this. And there are people that are not serial converting or becoming positive, and are people that are having smarter sex because of the programs that are funded by AIDS Lifecycle. So I hope all of you out there will help me out.
Okay, listeners, go to the KinkyCast homepage. Look for the button that says AIDS Lifecycle Donate Now. Push the button and it will take you right to the place where you need to drop a few bucks into a Midori's cup for AIDS awareness.
Thank you so much.
We're back with Lauren Kwan.
Hi, guys.
And she teaches in the Bay Area. I'm sure you teach several subjects, but the one that you're known for and the one you're sharing with us today is your protocol.
Yes. My protocol presentation or workshop is a little different from a lot of people's because I don't focus on protocol in an MSDS format, but it's more of a primer class. And a primer is just, you know, the elementary principles and concepts. So that this is basically protocol for trying to understand the concepts around it. Would it work for you? Will it not work for you? Is it something that you want to incorporate? So the presentation is geared toward newbies, newish. Although I've had a number of people in my presentations who are old hands, I mean, people I've seen around for years, and they tell me they get something out of it. So I'm grateful for that.
You're saying protocol. You're not saying high protocol. You're just saying protocol.
I am just saying protocol.
And how does that differ?
First off, the definition of protocol that I use in my workshop is an agreed upon code of conduct, rules, and rituals that are significant only to those who are following that code. So that definition encompasses high, low, day-to-day. I'm trying not to make delineations because, again, this is a protocol 101 type class, you know, giving the concept, the structure, and the basis, and then allowing the person who wishes to engage in protocol to grow it in the direction that works for them.
Now, I am looking at your primer. I notice you also note that in your definitions, etiquette.
Yes.
And that is different than protocol.
Yes, it is. So protocol is something that you agree to. Etiquette, and the definition I'm using for my workshop, is acceptable social behavior according to contemporary conventional norms within a culture, community, society, social class, or group. Now, lots of words. What do they mean, and how do they differ? So protocol is agreed upon. I have a basic protocol that people I play with follow. We've agreed on it. This is what they follow. No one else has to follow that protocol. No one else has agreed to it.
But now etiquette is something that we are surrounded by naturally in our social settings.
Mm-hmm.
And there's various different etiquettes in different situations. There's the wine etiquette versus beer etiquette, we might say.
Mm-hmm.
So each situation, but those are kind of norms that we just know by trial and error learning them.
And observation. Yeah, a lot of it is observation. And you'll find that in kink. And the reason I am separating these two is there's a mythology around protocol. You know, the old guard had protocol. First off, who was the old guard? And whenever I hear old guard, I kind of always envision Moses as done by Tom of Finland with this huge piece of cowhide and the 10 leather commandments burned into it. This mythology around leather people act a certain way. Leather people follow a set protocol. That's part of mythology. There is some back in the day, in the 80s, in the 70s, 60s, 50s, perhaps there was something that was modeled, but I don't believe that there was anything unifying or formal across all leather groups, across all leather communities.
Right. I have seen no evidence to indicate there was a universal code that has since been lost or has been passed down. I have yet to find anybody that can show me any evidence of such a code.
Yeah, I don't believe there was, but what I do believe was prevalent, you know, in the pre-internet days was because, and I'm going to speak specifically to leather because that's where I came into it, because it was sort of by invite only, or you had to find it, you know, in some cases you had to be vetted or vouched for in order to be invited in. There was an expectation of behavior. And when you've got a small number, you can put out an expectation of behavior. But it doesn't scale. You can say, hey, if you want to come to this party, this is how you behave.
And since it was literally passed down from person to person, you were, in fact, agreeing to it in order to participate.
Exactly. So for me, protocol, there's two things that protocol hinge upon. And one is it's agreed. And the other is it's significant to those who agree. It doesn't extend beyond that. So when I talk about a protocol, I talk about something that's agreed to, whether that's two people, a household, a club, an organization. In some ways, all of us deal with protocol in ways that, you know, you may not even consider protocol, but I do consider protocol. Almost every public dungeon has listed dungeon rules.
Mm-hmm. And that's a form of written protocol.
To me, that is, yes. The company I work for, in my employee handbook, it tells me what I can say and not say to a client, how I should dress. And I agree to that because, hey, you know, I like getting paid. It's a good thing. So again, I can take those items and I can consider that. My employee handbook is a protocol. Dungeon rules are a protocol. Keeping kosher, protocol.
All these are written codes. And I note that you make the distinction that protocols should be written.
I think they should. If I'm going to agree to something with someone, I want to know what I agree to. I want to have it handy just in case, did I agree to that or not?
So literally spelled out so that there's no ambiguity.
Correct. So for me, that's a thing I strongly suggest, is that when you engage in creating protocol with a person, a group of people, that it should be written down.
What are some of these advantages to creating this code, this protocol for your relationships? And that's what it is. It's a relationship based. Mm-hmm. What are some of the advantages?
Well, for one, it creates structure and a consistency around expectation. The bottom knows what they're supposed to be doing. There's safety for the bottom there. They're at ease. They don't have that bottom overthink, oh my God, what should I be doing next thing, which, God, really annoys me. It's great for me because then I don't have to micromanage. Because you're providing those expectations, there's a level of comfort there. If you're in a DS relationship, it can reinforce the power dynamic because it creates focus for the bottom and relaxation for the top. A real big advantage to protocol, to me, is for the top, is that creating a protocol, or at least starting a basic protocol for yourself, is an exercise in knowing and being able to communicate what it is that you want, what you expect. It really makes a person think. The other things that kind of happen with that are, if something stressful occurs, you always have protocol. You can have your protocol to fall back on. I don't have to think. The bottom doesn't have to think. They know in a stressful situation, okay, just be quiet, stand here, and wait to be told to do something. So
if all else fails, do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this creates the structure, and oftentimes I find that the one thing that the bottoms complain about most in the relationships is the lack of structure.
Mm-hmm.
And this helps create that structure.
Yes, I believe protocol does. Obviously, I'm very pro-protocol, but I don't think it's for everyone. I am a person who likes structure, so it's just natural for me, you know, to want to have a protocol or to have a set of guidelines, rules, I don't know what you want to call them, a code of conduct that I can always fall back on.
But that leads us to the possibility that there are disadvantages to the creation of a protocol.
There are always disadvantages.
It is never always greener on the other side?
Nope.
What are those disadvantages?
Okay, well, some of them, and probably the biggest one, is fantasy and reality can collide.
You mean my slaves aren't always naked, eager, willing, and perfect every day?
They are as perfect as I am.
Well, I think you're
perfect. No top is ever the perfect top. No bottom is ever the perfect bottom.
This is true.
And it's some of the other disadvantage of, it takes work to create protocol. It can be really narrow and confining if you don't think it out thoroughly. It will never cover every situation. Enforcement is actually, it's an advantage and a disadvantage is enforcement of protocols. So if the top does not enforce the protocol, why should the bottom comply? But even moreover, if the top isn't enforcing protocol and the bottom knows that, will the bottom continue to respect the top who doesn't care?
That's always the question. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think those relationships burn themselves out because of different expectations that are going on there.
And there's also testing from the bottom that will check and see how bulletproof the protocol is.
Oh, absolutely. It's either Midori or Master Skip Chasey. And I'm paraphrasing the quote because I heard it in a seminar and both of them were at this convention. The top owns the protocol. The protocol serves the relationship, and the bottom is quality assurance.
Excellent way you put it. Now, I have seen some protocols, though, that have become so involved, so complex, that they become effectively unmanageable without a rule book always at hand.
Oh, yeah. I've talked to people, and especially, I don't want to fault newbies. They want everything right now. I did. I know what that feeling's like. I'm a kid in a candy store. So, when they roll out the 200 foot long scroll and it's like, oh, that's your protocol. Do you know every item on that protocol? How do you enforce that protocol? I mean, is that memorized? Have you memorized that all? For me, protocol does not and should not be so detailed that you don't rely on common sense. A disadvantage of protocol is assuming that it'll handle everything. It does not. It cannot. The State Department has a protocol for visiting heads of state. And that's down to detail to the nth level, but it can't cover everything.
Protocol really needs to fit life, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
The realities of the situation that you find yourself in most often, your protocol, from my experience, needs to address those situations first before it gets into more esoteric areas.
I agree. When I advise or I make suggestions, because again, the workshop is really geared around creating a framework for a couple, a group, to create a protocol together. Or in my case, I don't have a primary partner that I engage in a DS relationship with. I do have time-based DS relationships with a number of people. And during our time together, they are under that protocol. Outside of that time, we may be in the same space. We may be at the same event. But if they are not with me, they are not under that protocol. So I cannot have this all-encompassing manifesto. What I do have instead is something that is just a basic set of behaviors, how to communicate with me to get my attention, to bring up a problem or issue, and comportment. How do they behave? How do they carry themselves? How do they address me? Where do they stand? Where do they sit when I want them to sit? How do we order dinner?
Well-planned and well-executed protocol looks effortless.
It should.
But the reality is, how much energy goes into getting it there?
A lot. A lot in the beginning. Because it's really a lot of thought, a lot of communication goes into it. And that communication is with yourself and the person you're going to engage protocol with. My base protocol is probably 12 years in the making. And so these are things that resonate for me.
And constantly refined.
Yes, the protocol that I have today, while still having many of the same tasks, items, behaviors, comportment as 5 years ago has different items. Some were dropped. Some have been added. Some refined. You know, oh, that doesn't suit me anymore. Cross that out.
Different things become important at different times.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, we're listening to and talking with Lauren Kwan, and we'll be back in just a moment.
No matter how you identify, mistress,
master,
owner,
primal,
daddy,
submissive,
girl,
bully,
slave,
switch,
you belong at self. Visit SEleatherFest.com. It comes to South June 11th through the 14th in Atlanta, and direct your vision.
We're back with Lauren Kwan coming to us from the West Coast, and the topic tonight is protocol. Welcome back, Lauren.
Thank you.
I'm looking at some of your notes here that you were so gracious to provide us. You're saying protocol is not just for DSMS anymore. I'm kind of curious where that goes.
Okay. Again, going back to the definition of protocol, it's correct conduct as agreed to by people. I would venture to say that negotiation is protocol. When you've got to, even if it's not a power-based dynamic, you have two people who are negotiating and you come up with a thing. You come up with this final thing and you both agree to it. It may not be written down. You know, if it's written down, fantastic. I think that's a great thing. But you have that. And so that helps guide your scene. There are things that people do and should be doing that one could consider a personal protocol, a protocol for myself, whether I'm a top or a bottom. Something like, I will always carry my asthma inhaler with me. I will not get caught up in resistance play. I have a bum shoulder. I will always have and mention that I have a safe call after the scene.
So this goes beyond just the DS or the MS play, but covers the surrounding areas that are important to our function that going into this play, as well as setting the parameters of the scene, possibly if it's a between two people that don't commonly play.
Exactly. I don't do a lot of pickup play anymore. I haven't in years. So my play relationships are based with people I've taken the time to get to know. And since I do like power in my play, I do tend to have a more DS-focused base protocol, but I recognize there are a lot of people who don't employ that power dynamic or a power dynamic of any sort in their play. Although, okay, you know, the bottom has to agree to let the top do things to their body. Hey, there's an inherent power dynamic, but it's not a dominant submissive behavior or a master-slave behavior. So having something set, and so I think it's a great idea for bottoms to create a list of what protocols do they want the top to agree to, what the top should have, what protocols do I want the bottom to agree to, and we call that negotiation.
That is kind of interesting because it brings us to the thought that protocols often be considered something that is a little further into the DS-MS relationship cycle. Mm-hmm. That is developing after relationship, but you bring up very interesting and thoughtful ideal that the new person really needs to be thinking about these protocols right from the start as they're beginning to negotiate with people from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I don't know if they want to call it protocol because there is, you know, there is mythology wrapped around that term, you know. But if they want to start off with, you know, I've got a yes, no, maybe list, but the focus of protocol is this code of conduct. You know, what rules do I want for myself? What rules do I want for the other person? How do we engage with each other? And can we agree on that?
Which is excellent for these new people coming in that have possibly expectations from fantasy that are not going to align with the realities of the scene that or the situation they're going to find themselves in.
Exactly. And there are also physical concerns. And that's something that I don't think we spend a lot of focus on. Do I want my bottom kneeling at my feet? Well, gosh, no, not if they've got a bum knee. And so one comes in with a fantasy of, oh, you know, I am the big domly dom and every person should be at my feet on their knees. Well, bullshit.
We're not all created equal.
No.
Especially as we get older in the scene, some functions just don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that some bottoms come in with the fantasy of that they're going to kneel, and then they realize a few minutes into this process that that concrete is much harder than they anticipated,
mm-hmm.
and their mindset is on the pain in their knees instead of on the rest of the situation that is there that could be thrilling and great if it wasn't for the pain in the knees.
Exactly. Or anything, you know, or they've got a bum knee. Okay, now their foot falls asleep. Something. And, you know, what you mentioned, we're getting older.
Say it ain't so.
Sadly, I didn't buy into that, but it is indeed happening.
We're all in denial.
It's a lot harder to get up when you're older. Or as a top, you know, I can't stand up comfortably for 3 hours at the bar, then the 4 hours at the play party, then the 2 hours at the after party. I got to sit down. In fact, actually, I got to go to bed. It's 11 o'clock. I'm tired.
Yeah, so these parties are starting at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I'm already gone by then.
Mm-hmm.
You said your protocols have been developing for less dozen or so years.
Not consciously.
But they've been evolving little by little.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, it's truth be told, my embracing of protocol in this more formalized manner has really been, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 years. Prior to that, there were things I already knew I liked, and I would communicate these things. But I didn't really consider that protocol. And I was literally the accidental dominant. Up until, you know, 6-7 years ago, I considered myself an SM top. I want some degree of deference because I'm beating your ass. But beyond that, I did not really want that big power dynamic. I didn't want that much. I wanted control over your body. I didn't necessarily want control over your mind. Although I do like a good mind fuck, you know. So
who doesn't?
Right. And a mind fuck is a terrible thing to waste.
You went there.
Yep, I did. And I found myself in a situation where it was pretty much DS-based, and I was freaking out. And it's like, oh my God, why isn't she kneeling? Wait, do I want her to kneel? I don't even know if I want her to kneel. Maybe I want her to stand over there. What the hell do I want? And why the hell is she not reading my mind? And that really kind of, oh, I need to look at this.
And why isn't she bringing you a water and a strawberry and that sort of thing?
Exactly. You know, and wait, I don't even like strawberries.
Lauren, did you back up and go back to you went back to what you already knew?
Mm-hmm.
And I see that was a point. Start with what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then base it on successes. So what works, build upon what is working.
Exactly.
And this is how you get a good protocol that develops over time and it evolves as your situation evolves.
Yes, and you need to be able to change your protocol as you change, as the relationship changes. If you embark on new or different relationships, I'm poly. So I have 3 play partners, and each of them have the same base protocol. Some items are different from one to the other because these are 3 different individuals. What works for me and them together is what created those different protocols.
But you say there's a core that carries across all the relationships,
mm-hmm.
so that there's a certain expectation the way the relationships work, but the actual intimate details, those protocols may be a little different because they fit the people involved directly.
Mm-hmm.
Then that goes back to earlier when we talked about protocols being for groups. Poly's a group.
Yep.
Do you find that that is something that a lot of poly groups are skipping is creating this protocol?
I don't know that they would call it protocol. I think a lot of poly groups, and I can't speak for any other than my own, but when I talk to my friends, to my peers, pretty much everybody has agreements. You can call it a protocol or you can call it an agreement on how engagement occurs, how space does or does not overlap, where stuff happens. So if people who engage in poly groups and poly play don't have those agreements or don't have those protocols, I think a lot of hurt feelings can happen. I think there can be a lot of misunderstanding.
So they maybe go under different titles, but they still serve the purpose of what we're talking about as protocols in the leather lifestyle. One size fits all protocol is the same protocol for a restaurant as a play space, as is family, as is.
Yeah, no. No, not at all. If you have an item in your protocol that you will always greet me by kissing my hand, that's not going to go well if you're waiting at the BART platform. It can go well in a play space, but no, there is no one size fits all. So protocol needs to be flexible. Protocol should have, I hate that. I hate the shoulds. Having a protocol for set types of events is a good idea. The thing that works for me is I do have this base. So some of the things that are specific, like one of my protocol items, which I carry in low, medium, and high protocol, is that the bottom can carry on conversations with others, but not so much that they lose sight of being in service to me. So if I step away, you follow. And that suits low, medium, and high protocol. A low protocol item is if you need to use the phone to text or call, you know, or review email or whatever, request permission first, you know, and that's great for low. I would not, if it's high protocol, give me your phone, you know.
You are focused on me entirely. This is it.
Yes.
So when we talk about low, medium, high, we are talking about increasing levels is the greater focus on the DS exchange at that moment.
Correct.
And I see you have a term, life happens.
Mm-hmm.
Life doesn't happen in the DS world.
Oh, if only that were true.
It's not. You're just blowing all of my fantasies, and many of our listeners are having to face that this is also reality time.
Mm-hmm. Lauren, are you saying that you bottom to your boss?
I am saying that my boss pays my checks.
Uh-huh.
He signs my paycheck.
And so when they want you to do something, you get to do it.
That's right.
And people that have families, that have kids, they have to bottom to their kids whenever they need to be hauled around from school to soccer field and when they're sick. You know, it changes your whole life. And sometimes it's very hard to be kinky when life interferes.
There needs to be something in protocol around that. You know, again, if and I'm kind of moving back into protocol as a vehicle within a DS and MS relationship. You may have to suspend protocol. There may have been an injury, a death in the family. And I think it's really, really important that you have a way to suspend that protocol and not have it seem like a failure or a blaming.
So are you saying there should be a protocol for no protocol?
Exactly.
So this is kind of planning ahead on if this happens and we can't do this, we are still in that space, but the rules are a little different.
Correct.
People are going to be creating their protocols. Hopefully now, giving these a little bit more thought. For TOPS, what are the considerations for TOPS as the protocols are being created?
For the TOPS, again, there's the implication is that you own the protocol. And there's an implication in every line of protocol that you, the top, are agreeing to. And that is that you're creating the space for the bottom to be successful in performing this protocol. That you're providing any tools needed for this protocol. And by that, it could be anything as much as, I'm going to buy you knee pads because I do want you kneeling, you know, or I'm going to make sure that you can perform a specific duty successfully. You know, if you can't cook, I'm not going to make you cook dinner. But if you can cook, I'm going to make sure you have decent knives and good cookware. So, you know, providing the tools for the bottom to be successful in that protocol. Enforcing the protocol, that is so key. In specific to DSMS relationships with protocol, if the top does not enforce, that leaves the bottom on their own. Without enforcing that protocol, you lose something. I have breached my own protocol. And recognizing that I've done that, oh my gosh, oh, I'm sorry, I just violated protocol, and I'll apologize to the bottom. And it shocks the hell out of them.
And the skies parted, and the seas boiled, and everything fell apart, right?
Exactly. I literally had one of my play partners, like, jaw dropped. Did you just apologize? Yes, I violated protocol. Here's my keys, go. So.
And we were back a little bit to the mindfuck part, right?
Yep. It wasn't intentional, but it worked that way.
You know, since everybody's perfect, the tops are perfect, I should say. You know, we never make mistakes, so it's just a mind fuck.
Must have been.
Lauren, what else can you share with our listeners to get them started? We'll have some links on our hot pages for our listeners to delve a little deeper. Are there any resources that you would, readings or resources that you would suggest to the listeners that are in more remote settings?
There's dozens of reasonable protocol lists that I've seen on FetLife. But there's also a metric fuck ton of really bad advice out there too. So I'm kind of doing that one with a little bit of fear there. Directly with protocol, I can't think off the top of my head of anything that you refer to. But a lot of protocol really does come down to common sense and motivation. It's really just about being able to articulate what kind of behavior, what kind of ritual, what kind of conduct do you want in your relationship, whether it's SM play or master-slave?
Is it wise for the people that are beginning to explore this to introduce one or two protocols at a time, get comfortable with those, and then build?
Oh, absolutely. I am a firm believer in success builds success. So if you have a couple of items, just a couple of tasks, and start with easy things. I think behavior is a little bit more difficult to manage, but tasks, if you want the person to always be standing at your right because you're right-handed or you hear better with that ear, have them do that. And then that becomes part of the nature of the relationship. So start with something like that. Start with how you wish to be referred to. You will always call me Sir Dark Master Hoffenbrow. I don't know, something.
Poobah's got to be in there somewhere.
Poobah's got to be in there, yeah.
Yeah, and Lord Muckety Muck
Lord
of
Muckety
the House
Muck.
Of Pretension.
There we go.
Yeah, okay.
So things like that. One of the things also, make it realistic and sustainable. There's a huge difference between when you greet me, come forward and put your head on my shoulder versus stand on one foot and recite the Pledge of Allegiance in Farsi. It's not sustainable. I'm telling you, there are...
We have seen it in some people's protocols.
There is, and make it clear, make it very realistic. Simplicity, I'm going to start with saying simplicity is a great place. It's simple. A 30-minute daily ritual is not simple. Make it very clear. There's a huge difference between make sure my glass is never empty and read my mind.
There is a huge difference. And for some of the people that are just starting into this, is there some basic outline protocols available that people can look at and then adapt to their situation?
I've seen people posting their protocols on FET. I don't know how one would search for that. I would say probably if you look at the more formal groups, maybe do a search on high protocol or something and start there. Standing on the shoulders of giants is a great idea. If there's something out there that you're seeing that resonates with you, by all means, take it. Consider existing models that, but most importantly is it needs to resonate with you. I like military. I think the military is hot. So a lot of my protocol actually incorporates certain military bearing. I also am a big fan of Downton Abbey. And actually prior to that, I really like the Victorian era, the formality of it, the gentility of it. So some of my protocol kind of is in the spirit of Lord of the Manor.
But there's a tremendous amount of protocol that's in Lord of the Manor.
Exactly.
And so just, watching the show, you can see how things are very ordered. You can watch how at 4 o'clock tea is served and things just happen automatically and it is carved in stone.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want this to be carved in stone, but that's the idea is there are practical models out there already.
Well, there is the 1950s had a certain social expectation that many people are still somewhat familiar with seeing directly mm-hmm. in their parents and grandparents. So,
mm-hmm.
And there's a whole 1950s housewife protocol.
Yes.
Yeah. So
there is. And, and that's alive and well. That's thriving. And a lot of these 1950s housewives, I would not mess with. They are some tough ladies. I'm telling you.
They are.
They are. Yes, they are.
for our listeners out there, there is a protocol group on FetLife, and it has a lot of things that you can review to get a structure to take a look at.
I think that I would say be realistic and take it slow.
Yes. And when I mean realistic, I mean, if can you enforce it? Is it something that can physically actually occur?
Every time.
Every time. Can it be consistent? And is it practical? Certain things as hot and as, oh my God, that really shakes my shorts, as that may be, it's just not practical.
Something as simple in theory as meeting the top at the door naked every day, that often becomes impossibly cumbersome in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because there are other people that come into play that are not part of your kink.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a whole host of problems that just doesn't. So, you know, Lauren, anything else you'd like to add? You've been great today.
Well, thank you. The only thing I guess really to add is, and this is a semantic difference or sort of a practical difference between protocol and etiquette, is what somebody has agreed to do with me, they've agreed to do with me. If you're not part of my protocol, if you're not part of my poly group, I don't need that behavior. I really have a pet peeve about people putting their protocol on me when I have not agreed to it.
I will second that.
So it's, you know, Midori has a great quote, your protocol is not my etiquette.
Very true.
We really need to capture our quotable quotes from the community. Because they are some good ones, and you just won't find them searching the quote indexes on the web.
How true.
Lauren, I am jealous of your locale. Enjoy your weather.
I intend to.
We're expecting 4 inches of snow.
I'm sorry.
You can always, no, you probably can't come and join us because the air flight system will go haywire yet again.
Again, thank you so much, Lauren. This has been great for our audience. And I learned a lot tonight myself.
I thank you.
You have been listening to episode 58 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week.